Radio Africana,
your non-stop entertainment radio.
Can we give each other hope? 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 Hope, bringing others hope, and that's what we need in this world indeed. So do not be afraid to keep each other safe. I'm sure you'd be amazed what you can do. One love for your brother, one love for your sister.
Was Hopebringer by Jean Paul and Roxanne Asumu, and this song opens our program today. A melody that holds you without rushing you, that asks nothing of you except that you arrive. Let it settle over you for a moment, wherever you are, whether that's the kitchen, the car, a quiet room with the door closed. Let this music be the music that makes a little room in your chest for whatever you're carrying today. And if you felt something in those few minutes, and if something in you went quiet or opened just a little, hold on to that feeling, because that is the feeling we are going to be working with today. Welcome to Second Chances. I am Hilaria Asumu, your host, and today I want to talk to you about something that I know lives in many of our households, in many of our hearts, and in most of our silences. We are going to talk about strength, what it means, where it came from, what it gives us, and gently, honestly, what it sometimes costs us. I want to begin with a question. And I want you to sit with it, not answer it straight away, just let it settle. When was the last time someone asked how you were and you told them the truth? Not the version designed to reassure them, not the "I'm fine, everything's fine" that you say before they even finished asking. The truth. When was the last time you said out loud to another human being, "I'm not doing well, and I could really use some support right now"? For many of us, that question alone feels enormous, and I want to ask, why is that? What have we been taught about needing, about showing what we feel, about what it means to be held rather than to hold everyone else? Those are the questions we're exploring today. And I come to this conversation not as someone standing outside looking in. I come to it from the inside. From a life that has tested every definition of strength I've ever held. And I can tell you, some of those definitions saved me. And some of them nearly broke me. So this is not theory. This is not a lecture. This is a conversation between people who understand what it is to carry something heavy and who deserve to be held while they do it. This program is for every age, for the elder who came to this country with almost nothing and built a life from the ground up. For the parents sitting in the middle, raising children while looking after aging parents, trying to be everything to everyone and wondering when anyone is going to ask about them. For the young person carrying things in silence because they've been watching the adults do exactly the same. And for those men, our men, who were handed a particular kind of strength, the quiet, unquestioning, get on with it kind, and were never given permission to put it down, even for a moment. This hour is for all of you. I want to start where most of us begin, with what we were shown, with what was demonstrated to us before we had words for it. If you grew up in an Afro-Caribbean household or if your parents came from the Caribbean or West Africa to build a life in this country, then you already know something about strength. You didn't learn it from a book, you learned it from watching, tacitly. You watched it in the way your mother stood at 6 in the morning, already dressed for a double shift, making breakfast with her back to the room. You felt it in the way your father sat at the table after work, quiet, contained, carrying things he would never say out loud. But that you could feel in the air around him. You saw it in the aunties and the uncles who didn't complain, who didn't dwell. Who got on with it? Who looked you in the eye and said, "Hold your head up." Strength was not explained to you. It was passed to you like something in the blood. And I want to be clear about something, because this program is not a critique of the people who raised us. The generation that came before us, those men and women who left Caribbean islands and West African cities, who built lives in a Britain that was not always welcoming, who worked the night shifts and the double shifts and still went to church on Sunday morning, they carried something extraordinary. Their resilience was not a performance, it was survival. They were building something in unfamiliar soil, and they couldn't afford, literally, practically, socially, to appear weak. Being seen as vulnerable was a risk they couldn't take. So they didn't. And we, the children who watched them, received that as the instruction. We didn't learn to be strong. We learned to survive quietly. And there's a difference between those two things. Surviving quietly is something you do when the environment demands it. When the institution doesn't believe you, you learn not to ask. When grief is safe to show in public, it finds somewhere private to live. When home becomes the only place you're allowed to feel anything, and even home has its limits, you learn to compress. That kind of quiet strength made sense. In its time, in its context, it was wisdom. But wisdom is not forever. And many of us are still living by the rules that were written for a different season. Now, I want to say something about faith. Because for many of us, across many different traditions, faith and strength have been deeply intertwined. Whether you're Pentecostal, Anglican, Catholic, Muslim, or you describe yourself as spiritual rather than religious, There is a version of this in every tradition. The idea that trusting God means not being afraid, that having faith means not having doubt, that if you're suffering, you pray harder, you praise harder, you push through. But there's something beautiful in that. There's real power in anchoring yourself to something larger than your circumstances. I know this. I have lived this. My faith has held me through things that should have broken me. But I also know, and I say this with real tenderness, that some of us have used faith as a place to hide our pain rather than a place to bring it. That the sanctuary became somewhere to perform peace rather than to find it. That God is good became something we said before we let ourselves feel whether God felt present that day or not. We celebrate strength, but we rarely ask what it's costing us. That is a question I want this program to hold. Not to dismantle what strength has given us, but to ask honestly without judgment what it has taken away from us. Whether we are ready to have a different conversation. But there's a song I want you to hear. It's about the slow, honest process of arriving at yourself. Not the version of yourself that was shaped by other people's expectations or other people's fear or other people's need for you to be invulnerable. Alicia Keys wrote Brand New Me about that journey. The one that doesn't happen overnight. The one that asks you to look at yourself clearly. Let it speak to you for a few minutes.
It's been a while. I'm not who I was before. You look surprised. Your words don't burn me anymore. Been meaning to tell ya, but I guess it's clear to see. Don't be mad. It's just a brand new kind of me. Can't be bad. I found a brand new kind of free. Careful with your ego. He's the one that we should blame. Had to grab my heart back. God knows something had to change. Thought that you'd be happy. I found the one thing I need. Why you mad? It's just a brand new kind of me. It took a long, long time to get here. It took a brave, brave girl to try. If I talk a little louder, if I speak up when you're wrong, if I walk a little taller, I've been under you too long. If you notice that I'm different, I'm taking personally. Don't be mad, it's just a brand new kind of me. And it ain't bad. Found a brand new kind of free. Oh, it took a long, long road to get here. It took a brave, brave girl to try. I've taken one too many excuses, one too many lies. Don't be surprised. Oh,
not waiting for your okay. I'll never be perfect, but at least now I'm brave. And now my heart is open, I can finally breathe. Don't be mad, it's just a brand new kind of free. That ain't bad, I found a brand new kind of me. Don't be mad, it's a brand new time for me.
Welcome back. That was Brand New Me, Alicia Keys. And there's something in the way that song moves. You feel the weight of what it costs to become you. Not to perform yourself, to actually become. We're going to stay with that because the next part of what we're exploring today lives right in that space. So I want to talk about the hidden cost. I want to talk about the body for a moment. Not in a clinical way, just honestly. Because the body is where the cost of suppression eventually lands. You can compress emotion for a long time. You can train yourself to push through, to smile, to cope, to perform resilience so consistently that it starts to feel like you feel like who you are. But the body is paying attention even when you've stopped. The sleepless night that won't let you rest even when you're exhausted. The back that has been carrying tension for so long, it has forgotten how to release it. The jaw that is tight before you even opened your eyes in the morning. The low-level sadness that you've explained away so many times, it doesn't even feel like sadness anymore. It just feels like Tuesday. These are not signs of weakness. They are signs of a system that has been under pressure, sustained, unacknowledged, unreleased pressure for far too long. We've built walls strong enough to hold everyone else up and forgot to leave a door for ourselves. I'll repeat that. We built walls strong enough to hold everyone else up and forgot to leave a door for ourselves. We women in our community, we carry a particular version of this. We're often the ones absorbing the most and showing the least. We are the ones who manage other people's fear, soothe other people's anxiety, hold the household together, feed the family, show up for everyone, while privately wondering if anyone is going to show up for us. And we do it because we love our families deeply. We do it because we're taught that love looks like service. We do it because somewhere in our formation, being needed became our way of feeling safe, of feeling worthy, of feeling that our presence in the world meant something. And that is not a character flaw. That is the inheritance we received, and it is worth naming what it costs. And then there are our men. The men. Because I want to be clear, emotional suppression is not a woman's issue. It is a human issue. But in our community, it takes a particular shape in men. The men who were raised to provide and protect, and for whom that call was always the loudest. The fathers who sat in hospital waiting rooms carrying enormous fear and still didn't tell anyone what they were feeling because they all believed their family needed them to be steady. The sons who became the man of the house before they were emotionally ready and who never got to grieve that. And there are the husbands who never allowed themselves to break down because they had decided that breaking down was something that happened to somebody else elsewhere. I want to speak directly to those men today. You are not less strong for having feelings. You are not less of a man for needing someone to talk to. You are not failing your family by acknowledging that you're carrying something heavy. In fact, and I say this with real conviction, the men who model emotional honesty in front of their children are giving those children one of the most valuable gifts they will ever receive. The gift of knowing that feelings are survivable, that you can feel something, really feel it, and still be standing on the other side. In many of our homes, emotions were felt deeply, just never spoken out loud. And I understand exactly why. In cultures where you've had to be twice as good to get half as far, emotional expression can feel like a liability. To say I'm struggling in certain spaces was to give someone ammunition. To cry was to risk being dismissed. To admit that you didn't know what to do was to be seen as someone who couldn't manage. So you learned to manage. Loudly, silently, always. And that protected you. No, I'm not dismissing that. It was a form of wisdom. But the protection came at a price. And part of what this program is about, every single week, is creating the kind of space where that price can be honestly named, not as weakness, but as truth. And truth spoken in a community has a way of releasing what silence has been holding for years. This next song honors every person in this audience who has been holding something heavier than anyone knew. Here is Superwoman by Alicia Keys. It does something I think is very important. It doesn't ask you to stop being strong. It asks you to be seen in your strength, to let the weight be acknowledged, to let someone say, I see what you're carrying. I see you. Let it hold you for a few minutes, and I'll see you right back in a minute.
Strengthen me. Why's that? 'Cause I am
Welcome back. Superwoman by Alicia Keys. And there's something the way that song closes, not in triumph, but in quiet dignity, the kind that comes from having looked honestly at what you're carrying. The energy we're stepping into now, because this next part of our time together is where we start to look at what strength actually looks like when it opens up. And in this next segment, we're talking about trust and vulnerability. I want to share something personal with you now, something I don't share lightly, but something I believe belongs in this conversation. Because everything we've been talking about today, the performance of strength, the cost of silence, the question of what we're allowed to feel, I have lived all of it. In 2008, I was pregnant. And at 22 weeks, I had a miscarriage. And what followed was septicemia, multiple organ failure, 2 cardiac arrests, and I was in a coma for 2 weeks. And, you know, I wouldn't wake up from that coma. And as they were bringing me out of that coma, my lungs collapsed. They had to reintubate me to save my life. And in trying to bring me out of this coma, I wouldn't wake up. And I'm told that, you know, my husband was given a date they planned to turn off the machine. And on that date, that morning, I woke up. I came home from hospital. I went on dialysis. And 2 years later, the doctors took me off dialysis and wanted to manage my condition. But then, whether fortunately or unfortunately, I got pregnant again. And the same thing happened. A miscarriage at 22 weeks, septicemia, multiple organ failure, 2 cardiac arrests, and I was in another coma. Another fight. And this time when I came out, I was told I might be permanently paralyzed on one side of my body. But you see, God has a reason for everything that happens. I want you to understand what I'm telling you. I had 2 catastrophic pregnancies, 2 cardiac arrests, 2 comas. A body that has been through things that most medical textbooks would describe in past tense. And throughout all of it, I was trying to be strong, trying to protect my children from the full weight of what was happening, trying to reassure my husband even when I was the one who needed to be reassured, trying to be present, always present, when inside I was terrified. And I want to say something to you that took me a long time to understand. You are allowed to be held, not just relied on. I repeat that. You are allowed to be held, not just relied on. That is something I want every person listening to truly receive today. You are allowed to need. You are allowed to receive. You are allowed to say, I cannot hold this by myself. And for those of us who have been the pillar for so long, the one everybody leans on, the one who never shows the cracks, that sentence can feel almost dangerous. As if saying it would collapse something. But here is what I learned. Allowing someone to truly give to you, to hold you, not just to help you, is one of the most intimate things that can happen between 2 people. And it takes a particular kind of courage. Giving is the easier thing. Receiving is the vulnerable one. I know this because I was the recipient of one of the most extraordinary acts of love I've ever witnessed. When I was back on dialysis after my second pregnancy, years in, exhausted, my antibodies at a level that made matching nearly impossible, my family was tested. 7 siblings, both parents, none of them were a match. And then my close friend came to me, Onyebuchi Odiaka, I'm ever grateful to her for giving me hope. She came to me and said, "Well, you can have one of mine. I'm healthy, I don't drink, I don't smoke, so you can have one of my kidneys." She tested, but unfortunately she wasn't a match. And she decided to join the NHS PED scheme. For those of you who don't know what that is, I want to explain it because it is one of the most remarkable things that exists in our healthcare system. It means she offered her kidney, not to me directly, because she wasn't a biological match for me, but into the national pool. She said, "Take my kidney and in exchange, find a kidney for my friend." She offered her own body as an act of love, as currency, as commitment. But we waited 3 years on that scheme. My antibodies were at 97%. That means my body will reject nearly any kidney that existed on the planet. Even her extraordinary sacrifice, 3 years of it, could not find me a match. The bravest thing I ever did was not survive. It was asking my children to imagine a world without me and teaching them how to be whole in it. In 2017, I received a call. I was a second choice candidate for a transplant. I waited. I went to the hospital from 6:30 in the morning to 6:30 in the evening. And then someone else received it. I was unperturbed. I went home. And I did the thing that no parent ever wants to do. I began to prepare. Because I'd given up hope. Because usually it's not very easy to find a match. I sat with my children, who were teenagers by this time, who had grown up watching their mother fight. And I said what needed to be said. I told them and I showed them how to live without me. I showed them how to be independent. I said the things you say when you're trying to be a good parent, even in your own dying. And I want to tell you, that is not a weakness. That was a different kind of strength altogether. The kind that comes from not pushing through, but from surrendering to the truth of the moment. And then, after all of that, shortly afterwards, in 2018, something happened. A mother lost her son. In the worst moment a human being can endure, she said yes. She said yes to organ donation. And one of her son's kidneys found its way to me. The woman whose body will reject almost anything on earth. It did not reject his. The gift was a kidney. But what it gave back was presence. And presence is everything. My children, who were 5 and 6 years old when my ordeal began, and now 23 and 24. My younger sisters, who were teenagers when I first went into a coma, are now married with children of their own. And I was there when those babies arrived. I was in the room. I cut one of them their umbilical cord. The bond between me and that child is unbreakable. That is what a donated organ, a kidney, actually gives. Whatever organ you donate, that is what it does. it gives someone a second chance. Not just years, presence, the ability to be at a table, in a room, in a moment that would otherwise have had an empty space where you used to be. I think about that mother often. I think about what it takes to lose a child. The loss that breaks the order of things. The loss that should never happen. And in that grief, to still choose to give. That is not duty. That is extraordinary love. And because she made that choice, a choice her family carried on her behalf, my family got more time. I want to say something to you about that choice. Not with pressure. No, no pressure. Not to make you feel obligated. But because I believe that when we understand what is actually at stake for real families in real communities right now, the conversation changes. In the UK, people from Black, Asian and other ethnic communities make up almost a third of those waiting for an organ transplant. But they represent only a small fraction of donors. That gap is not abstract. It is a difference between people like me and people who didn't make it. It is a difference between children keeping their parents and growing up without them. NHS Blood and Transplant, in short NHSBT, have made it simple to register your decision about donation. And you can do it at nhsbt.nhs.uk. It takes minutes. Or you can go straight to the website organdonation.nhs.uk. But beyond registering, the most important thing you can do is talk to your family. Today, this week, when you register, speak to your family about your choice so that if you're not in a position to do so, they can ensure that your wishes are respected. You don't have to talk to them with a speech. Just have a small conversation. Just like, you know, say something like, you know, I've been thinking about this. Have you? That's how the conversation starts. Because families make the final decision. And families who know your wishes carry less of a burden in an already devastating moment. That conversation is a gift. Even if it feels uncomfortable, especially because it feels uncomfortable. Have that conversation. I want to play you a song about what it means to show up for someone, no matter where you are, no matter what you're facing. This is I'll Find You by Lucrae and Tori Kelly. It has a quality of love that doesn't wait to be asked. That doesn't require perfect conditions. That says, wherever you are, in whatever state, I will not leave you there. I think it captures what that friend and that mother were both saying. Let the song minister to you tonight. I'll see you back here in a little bit. Don't go away.
Just fight a little longer, my friend. It's all worth it in the end. But when you got nobody to turn to, just hold on and I'll find you. I'll find you. I'll find you. Just hold on and I'll find you.
I'm hanging on by a thread, and all I'm clinging to is prayers. And every breath is like a battle. I feel like I ain't come prepared. And death's knocking on the front door. Pain's creeping through the back. Fear's crawling through the windows. Waiting for them to attack. They say don't get bitter, get better. I'm working on switching them letters. But tell God I'ma need a whole lot of hope keeping it together. I'm smiling in everyone's face. I'm crying whenever they leave the room. They don't know the battle I face.
They don't understand what I'm going through. The world trying to play with my soul. I'm just trying to find where to go. I'm trying to remember the way. I'm trying to get back to my home. But I can't do this on my own. That's why I'm just trusting in you. Cause I don't know where else to go. And I don't know what else to do.
Just fight a little longer, my friend.
Welcome back. That was I'll Find You, and I hope you enjoyed it. That is the spirit we carry in our final conversation today. Because we've looked honestly at what strength costs, and we've heard what love that truly shows up looks like. Now it's time to talk about what we can actually do. Not dramatically, not at all at once, just what is the small, honest, possible step you could take. And that is the practical shift we're going to be talking about in this next segment. I know that talking about change is one thing. I know some of you are sitting with something very specific right now. A person you've been worried about, a feeling you haven't named, a conversation you've been putting off. I know that the idea of doing something different can feel enormous. So I want to be gentle here and I want to be practical. Because I'm not asking anyone to transform overnight. I'm not asking you to walk out of this program and become someone who processes everything out loud. All I'm asking is for something much smaller. I'm asking for one shift, one small opening, one true thing. The first shift is the most private one, and it starts with you alone. Find a moment this week without your phone, without the television, without anyone needing anything from you, and ask yourself honestly, what am I carrying right now? Not what you should be feeling, not the spiritual answer, not the strong answer. What are you actually carrying? Give it a name, even just in your own head. Tired, afraid, lonely, unseen, grieving, angry, hollow, whatever it is. Naming something is the beginning of not being consumed by it. It doesn't require anyone else. It just requires you to be honest with yourself for 5 minutes. That alone is strength. The second shift is to identify one person, not a crowd, not a committee, one person in your life, a sibling, a trusted friend, a pastor or elder you respect, someone in your faith community who you believe has the capacity to hold something real without trying to fix it. And then, when you're ready, say something true to them. It does not need to be everything. It can be simple as saying, I've been struggling recently and I don't always know how to say it. That is enough. That is the door opening a crack. And you'll be surprised. That crack is enough. That crack is often all it takes for someone who's been waiting to say the same thing to finally say it back. Being strong for your family is love, but it cannot be the only language you speak. For parents listening today, this matters in a particular way. Our children are watching us and they're learning from what we model, not just what we tell them. If they never see us say, I need some support, they will not know they're allowed to say it either. If they never see us receive care from another person, they will learn to reject it when it is offered to them. But if they see us acknowledge a struggle and then reach out for a hand, if they see us bring something difficult to prayer or to conversation rather than bury it, they carry that into their relationships, into how they raise their own children, into how they survive the inevitable hard seasons that life will bring to all of us. You are not making this shift for yourself. You are making it for the people who are watching you become it. The third shift, and I want to say this with all the care it deserves, is to bring the donation conversation into your home. I know it can feel heavy. I know that in many of our traditions, talking about death can feel like inviting it. I know that for some families, the very idea of this conversation feels like crossing a line that has never been crossed, especially in the Black community. We are all guilty of it. We don't want to know. I want to gently offer you a different way of holding it. Talking about what you want after you're gone is not darkness. It is one of the most generous things you can do for the people who love you. Because what happens when families haven't had this conversation? In the worst moment, in shock, in grief, in devastation, they're asked to make a decision they were never prepared for. And that decision will stay with them for the rest of their lives. But the gift of preparation is the gift of clarity. It says, you don't have to guess. You know what I wanted. You can grieve without that burden. You can honor me as exactly as I asked. That is love. You can start this conversation over a meal this week, over tea, on the phone. Just say, I've been thinking about organ donation. I heard something on radio. What do you think? That's enough to begin. And if you want to register your decision or learn more about the PEDS scheme or to find resources tailored to our community, the NHS Blood and Transplant website is there for you. It is clear, it is kind, and it has information specifically for Black and global majority communities. They are there. They want to help you. Some things sometimes need to be held for a little while before they can be spoken. Just know that wherever you're sitting with it, it is welcome here. You can speak, you can talk to us, however you want, you can reach out. So I want to close our time today with the place I always come back to. The place that holds everything I've said today inside it. I think about the mother who gave, not in the abstract, specifically her, a woman I have never met and we carry forever. She lost her son, the loss that breaks the order of the world. And from that place, that unbearable, impossible, shattering place, she said yes. She said yes to organ donation. And her yes reached a woman in a hospital bed who had been waiting for 10 years, whose body will reject almost anything except this. I think about what it means to receive something you cannot repay. Something that did not come from policy or procedure. Something that came from one mother's love, extended even past her own grief. I carry that. Not as guilt, not as pressure, as responsibility. As a thing that asked me to show up fully for the life I have given. My children, who were 5 and 6 years old when this all began, they're 23 and 24 now. My sisters are married, their children exist. I was in those rooms. I have been present for lives that had already started to plan for my absence. And that presence, that ordinary, everyday or remarkable presence, is what I want to offer forward. They gave their grief so that I could give my children more time. That is a debt you don't repay. You pass it forward. And passing it forward for me means this program and all the other things that I do. It means coming here every week and saying the things we tend not to say. It means believing that our community deserves more than the instruction to be strong and get on with it. It means believing that vulnerability is not the opposite of strength. It is the truest expression of it. We talked today about where our idea of strength came from. We talked about the beautiful, necessary survival of those who came before us. And we talked about how that strength, so real, so earned, can sometimes become a cage if we are not careful. If we don't allow ourselves to feel the things it was keeping out. If we don't allow someone sometimes to hold us. If we don't make room in our homes, our families, our faith spaces for a different kind of truth telling. Strength is not silence. Strength is being able to speak and still stand. That is the kind of strength I want for us. The kind that is not afraid to need. The kind that can say to a person, to God, to the room, I'm carrying something and I could use some help. The kind that can sit with a family member and say, I want to tell you something about what I want when I'm gone. Not because I'm planning to go soon, but because I love you enough to not leave you guessing. That kind of strength is not weakness dressed up. It is the truest version of what it means to be fully, honestly alive. We talk about community. We talk about what we owe our community. But what do we owe ourselves? I will leave you with that question this week. What do you owe yourself? What conversation needs to happen? What feeling needs to be named? What person in your life needs to know your truth, not your performance? This has been Second Chances. I'm Hilaria Asumu. I'm here every Sunday at 5 p.m. on Radio Africana. And I'm so glad you were here with me today. If this program has moved you, please share it. Send it to someone who needs an hour to breathe. Someone who's been carrying something quietly. Someone who needs permission to put it down just for a moment. And if you want to register your organ donation decision or learn more about living donation and the PEDS scheme, visit organdonation.nhs.uk. Your decision matters more than you know. And if you're carrying something too heavy right now, please reach out to someone you trust, to your faith community, to your GP, to a mental health organization in your area. You are not alone. You never were. Please take care of each other, and I'll see you next week. I'm going to close today with a song that has traveled to generations of our community, through grief and celebration, through struggle and survival. This is Bill Withers' Lovely Day, and he wrote this from a place of gratitude, not for an easy life, but for the simple, extraordinary gift of still being here to live it. This is where I am today, and that is my prayer for everybody listening. Let it carry you out. I'll see you next week. Bye.
When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes, and something without warning, love, bears heavy on my mind. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day. impossible to fail. When someone else instead of me always seems to know the way, then I look at you and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you and I know it's gonna be a lovely day.
Africana.